Welcome, ladies and gents, and our friends beyond the binary. We're the first ever globe-trotting, visually stimulating podcast on the airwaves.
Hello, world. We're a globe-trotting vodcast, and we travel city by city looking for the best storytellers to host our new show, Pride This Way, produced by Pillars of Change Media. We have the best seat in the house for Pride festivals around the world, touring New York City, Madrid, and everywhere in between. We're amplifying the real stories that breathe life into Pride. Every stream, every subscriber directly funds our community around the globe. We're not just covering the parties, everybody. We're paying it forward.
There's only one way to see the world. Pride This Way.
Is this thing on? Are we live yet?
Welcome back to Provincetown Pride, Part 2, where the heels are high, the wigs are higher, and the town is serving more queer excellent per square foot than should legally be possible. From Delta Miles bringing the fire at the post office cabaret, to Senator Julian Sear holding it down with the pride of politics, we're bringing plenty of personality and just enough drama to keep everyone well-fed. Let's kiki, y'all.
We love it.
Tonight, we have Diva in Sabrina, the middle-aged witch.
Magic, mayhem, and menopause all in an hour-long musical.
7 p.m. is
showtime.
Yay!
So how is it like working together?
God, it's
horrible. Well, no. She said
it's
it.
It's incredible.
It's we have a good time together. We've been together for 5 years, yes, and we're on our fourth year together.
Wow.
Doing production shows in an attic.
Yeah.
You know, reached my peak. Should I just go for it?
Yeah.
Hello. I'm Delta Miles. That's spelled D E L T A M I L E S. And I'm the producer and director of Diva, the live singing drag spectacular. I should start by saying that Diva is actually an acronym we created to reclaim the word diva, what used to once mean women who are temperamental or difficult to work with. We wanted to reclaim, which means women who are daring, independent, vivacious, and ambitious. And it doesn't get more pride than that. So we really wanted to use that as a lens to form our shows.
This side angle is going to be great.
Can we avoid that and just use this?
No. No, sweetie.
Look at that. That's better.
You like that? No. I like it straight like that. Yeah, this is all part of it. This is Delta Miles.
Hi.
And we're sitting here at the Post Office Cafe.
With a side angle.
You are one of the select performers in a venue in Provincetown, which seems to be, you know, the golden echelon, if you will, of drag. It really is,
yeah.
How does that make you feel? Like, girl, you made it, right?
Yeah, I'm a very lucky human being to do what I do for a living year round. I'm my own boss. Mm-hmm. I set my own schedule.
Yes.
I do all my own negotiations for me and the girls. And it's a wonderful life to get to create and let all people experience queer art. No matter who they are or where they come from, everyone comes together to enjoy it.
It's not as easy for other drag performers where they live, right?
Right.
There's people coming in Florida, coming for drag in particular.
Right.
So if you were to give those drag queens some advice, what would that be?
Drag is a political statement. And no matter what anyone tells you, you should be doing it. Like they say, all drag is valid. I think it has to be valid because it is, I like to say that as drag queens, we're ambassadors of our community. And we're kind of like a middle finger to any and all people who try to tell us there's something wrong with us as a community. We're a representation of like, I'm here to exist. Mm-hmm. I'm here to stand out.
Right. You know? Fair.
So I think just getting into drag is an act on its own.
Yes, and just getting in, that's actually, I wanna ask you a fun, like, now question. Honey Davenport, you're familiar with that, is correct?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, winning IML.
Yes, I just heard about that.
How about that? And the background, I'm kind of involved in the leather community, which is a similar point of drag.
Right.
You know, it's a similar type of drag,
that
right?
Yes, it is.
And that's what Honey's been saying. There's been some backlash between why is a drag queen winning a leather outfit?
Right.
And I feel like drag is similar. So if you are getting involved in the leather community, you're getting involved in drag, right?
It's all drag.
It's all drag, drag, right?
I think there, you know, the girls and I were just talking about that very thing. And I think it's important to recognize that. But also, like, as a community, we're so clicky with one another. We're so exclusive. Like, listen, I love Provincetown. It's an incredible place, and it is queer inclusive, but it's not always, like, as a community, we know who we are, and we know how exclusive we can be to one another.
Absolutely.
And the leather community is another great example. But knowing the history of leather, and knowing that we lost an entire generation and an entire culture to the AIDS crisis, mm-hmm. I think that there is a certain pageantry now to leather without the recognition of what was lost and who we lost and why the leather community existed to begin with. So I think as long as that respect is there and that understanding is there, then anyone should be able to participate. But also it's structure and discipline, mm-hmm. which is in everything that you do. So I think that the leather community is so important to our community as a whole.
For sure.
And I think we need to always keep that in mind, that it's a very important thing.
The specific members of the community, everyone is important. It's a matter That's of right. knowing what your importance is and
That's
celebrating
That's exactly
that.
Right.
Well, I appreciate your time today.
Thank you for this lovely interview. Thank you out there in the world. Come visit us in Provincetown.
Well, thanks for being on our Pride This Way podcast.
Hell yeah. Thank you, Pride This Way. Thank you for the side angle.
When violence is on the rise across the U.S., policymakers have to step it up. In a blue state like Massachusetts, it's slightly easier to fight for LGBTQ plus rights. State Senator Julian Sear has backed and co-sponsored hate crime and civil rights legislation aimed at protecting rainbow residents statewide. We were fortunate to catch the senator at the Red Room in P-Town during Pride.
Welcome, Julian.
So good to be here. Welcome to Provincetown, Jason. I know you're a big fan.
I'm a big fan. Before we really get started, because a lot of people, younger people are watching this, I would like for you to tell people what a state senator does and why your position is important and why they should pay attention to vote to get the right people into office.
So state senate, state legislatures, right? Mm-hmm. At the federal level, we have a Congress, right, mm-hmm. of a House of Representatives and a U.S. Senate. And then each of the 50 states have their own mini Congresses, right? Most states have two houses, an upper chamber and a lower chamber. The state of Nebraska is a unicameral legislature, but—
Which means one.
One. So basically, we have a state Congress or a mini Congress, right, at the state level. Mm-hmm. So it's my job to represent about 180,000 people mm-hmm. across most all of Cape Cod, Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket. My district goes from like here mm-hmm. to Provincetown, Nantucket, and Martha's Vineyard.
And the two balls underneath.
There are 40 state senators. Mm-hmm. There are 160 state representatives. And so really it's my job to represent Cape Codders and Islanders and to work with my 39 other colleagues on addressing, you know, challenges big and small that people in Massachusetts face. So many of the decisions that are made in government that really affect people's lives. So much of this happens at the state level. So much of this happens at the local level. You know, we currently have a pretty fascist federal government who's pretty, really taking on and really kind of demonizing LGBTQ people, especially our trans siblings. There's so much that states can do and state legislators can do. Mm-hmm. And in Massachusetts, we've really been in the tip of the spear, the vanguard of that.
Yes. And I can speak to that from experience, too, because as a homosexual in New York City, as marriage equality became legal, you could have knocked me over with a feather that Massachusetts was at the forefront of that, as well as the legalization of marijuana. So Massachusetts is a really
first
fantastic,
east of the Mississippi.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, for cannabis.
Fantastic, like
first in marriage, first non-discrimination in the 90s. But we really, you know, try not to rest on our laurels, right? And no, I mean, because, you know, I think people think, oh, you're in Provincetown, oh, Massachusetts,
yeah.
You know, arguably one of the most progressive states in the country.
It really is.
We've got big challenges and issues. Do you know Massachusetts has the fourth highest number of book ban attempts in the country? You know, efforts by the Trump administration to thwart gender-affirming care, that's happening here. We still see, you know, if you see unaccompanied homeless youth, about 40% of them in our state are LGBTQ, suicidality, a whole host of other health risks are elevated here, right? So mm-hmm. even in places like Provincetown and in states like Massachusetts, where we're doing a lot right, mm-hmm. there's still a lot more that we need to do and we're trying to get done. Right. When I first ran for state senate, now almost 10 years ago, there were only about 300 out-elected officials across the country. Now we have over 1,000 out-elected officials across the country, right? So running for office, serving, you know, even if it's on a local board, a council, mm-hmm. makes a really big difference and has been a real kind of part of the recipe for success when we look at LGBTQ liberation. You know, having representation has really mattered. Mm-hmm. You know, from the days of Elaine Noble, who was the first out person elected to a state legislature here in Massachusetts. If you're someone who, you know, is interested in public service, wants to run, you know, run for office. Like, we need you running for office.
Massachusetts does sit as a leader in LGBTQ rights. What right now are you battling that's keeping you up at night?
First and foremost, our trans siblings are under attack almost like never before, right? We have a federal administration that is intent on demonizing and going after some of the most vulnerable people we have in our society, right? Purely for political gain and really purely to distract from their incompetence, their mm-hmm. own corruption. And so we're doing everything we can in Massachusetts to protect trans folk and particularly access to gender-affirming care for people 19 and younger. Mm-hmm. The Trump administration has put out like a whole host of sort of a parade of maladies, of horrible things trying to interfere with decisions that, you know, people should be making with their doctors. So first and foremost, we're suing them, right? We have a great attorney general, mm-hmm. you know, and we're fighting them in court and we're winning. But we're also looking at how do we make sure that gender-affirming care continues in Massachusetts no matter what the fuck happens in Washington? So I teamed up with colleagues in the House. How do we ensure access to gender-affirming care no matter what? What the federal government is trying to do is to put, basically to look at the conditions of participation by which states participate in their Medicaid and Medicare programs, mm-hmm. and effectively say, hey, if you are paying for this care out of Medicaid dollars, then we're gonna cut off your access to Medicaid, right? Which is tens of billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. So we established an Affirming Healthcare Trust. This is a standalone entity in our state government, right, that is administered by our Department of Public Health, mm-hmm. that can continue to provide care. It can reimburse for care. It can provide a whole host of things that you need for care.
Right.
Actually, just this week, we sent to the governor a bill that puts $4.5 million into this trust. That's just over about what we think the state may be spending in our Medicaid dollars for this population. The Affirming Healthcare Trust is the first kind of part of this. And we now feel that Massachusetts is the first state in the nation to have this mechanism so that no matter what happens around gender-affirming care, those decisions can continue to be made by patients, by their families, and by their doctors, and that we can cover that care, whatever they do in Washington. So that's the first. You know, the second is making sure that we're protecting the providers of this care. Last year, Massachusetts was one of the first states in the country to pass a SHIELD law to protect providers of abortion care. And we were the first state that said, hey, look, they're coming after providers of abortion care, and they're also coming after providers of gender-affirming care. Let's have these protections apply equally to abortion care and to gender-affirming care. And so that was a law we passed just after the Dobbs decision in 2022. Well, we came back and we updated that law to make sure that it was really durable in this current federal environment. So that's another piece that's already been in place, that's been on the books for a while. And it's clearly been effective in continuing to provide access to both abortion and to gender-affirming care.
You guys are using the thinning filter, right?
Yeah. I'm not in that department, darling.
No, oh, I demand the Oprah Winfrey thinning filter.
I think it's already in.
Oh, okay. I sent my rider. I don't know why you wouldn't have it.
Sure, did you fax it?
Yes, I did.
Oh, that's why.
I faxed it over. And it also sent a second copy with a carrier pigeon.
It's Jason coming to you from the Red Room here in Provincetown. One of our next guests here, her name is Giselle. Welcome, Giselle.
Hello. How are you?
Very well. Very excited. I'm very excited because you are rock drag queen here in Provincetown, where it's just like, you know, drag and soul and like all that type of like stuff. It was really like pop and dance as well. That really reigns supreme here. So you stand out really easily. I love that you perform the more rock and roll songs. Mm. What made you do that?
It was when I first got here, I wasn't doing rock music. I was doing trying to just fit in, you know, and do what everyone else was doing. And I was doing, because this town has a lot of Broadway. And a lot of, there is a lot of live singing drag, which is great because I come from, I previously lived in New York and there wasn't a lot of live singing. And if it was, it was like in cabaret situations. But here it's more like for brunches and Broadway. And it wasn't quite fitting me because I've always been a little self-conscious about, one, my height. Like, out of drag, I'm 6'6". So in drag, I'm over 7 feet. My deep voice and just the music I love is rock. So I came here and I was trying to do, you know, the pop princesses and, like, all that stuff. But it just wasn't, it didn't feel right for me. So eventually I was just like, I just need to start doing what I like. And I started singing rock. And then it just turned into an even better version of Giselle.
Oh, great. Yeah. Well, with your drag persona, I've mentioned in your past that you can't always tell where Joshua, which is your given name, begins and Giselle begins and where Joshua ends.
I have to separate them in my brain sometimes, but my two personalities are very similar, but very different in probably the way you'd expect. Like, when I put on the drag and I put on all the stuff, I obviously just feel a little more like, oh, and I feel like I can flirt with people more and I can just like be over the top because drag is like a mask and, you know, you can kind of do whatever you want as a drag queen. But then as Joshua, it took me a while to get comfortable being on stage and like trying to like, I'm like, do I try and be sexy as a man? Do I try, like, what am I trying to do? But eventually it just turned into like Joshua and Giselle both love singing rock music. Giselle is over the top. She's sexual. She's a dynamite. And Joshua is more subdued and soulful than Giselle is. Giselle's more punchy in your face, and Joshua has more soul.
More soul. Well, you mentioned you lived in New York City, and you left New York City for Provincetown, from what I understand, because you felt it was too limiting, which is interesting to me because I still live in New York City. What was happening there in New York for you, and how did you find that here for you want to move to Provincetown? Because you're not the first one to move from New York to Provincetown.
No.
So what was it that clicked for you to be like, I think I need to go there? Like, that's to me, it's the angle of what I think is really interesting for people who end up here.
Yeah, actually, me ending up here was kind of an accident. I had never been to Provincetown before I came here. And then my roommate at the time in New York was coming here for a gig. And she was like, you have to come with me. You have to come perform with me. And I was like, I don't know, girl. I've never been. But she demanded it. And I came here and I saw the town. I performed. The audience was insane. They loved it. And I was like, oh, this is what it feels like to be appreciated. Wow. Okay, this is cool. And then they asked me after my first gig, they're like, do you want to spend the summer here and perform full time? And I was like, yes, I do. So I kind of just dropped everything I had going on in New York and I just came here because I needed something new.
What is a dream goal for you? Like, how are, like, I mean, do you feel like that you're kind of doing it, right?
Yeah, I am actually. I'm doing pretty much what I want to do. I'm performing, I'm singing. I just love singing so much. So my dream as Giselle is eventually I want to find a live band. I do have music coming out, so I do need a band to back me up. And my dream is to just tour and put on amazing concerts and have people come see me perform who necessarily maybe never seen a drag show or never experienced this.
Right.
But who can just, if they want, close their eyes and listen to the music and listen to the voice and see that it comes from the heart and it comes from the soul, and it's so fun. If you've never been here, please come here. Please at least try it out. I know it's kind of a pain in the ass to get to. You can't just pass through. You got to come here on purpose. But we have a great ferry, I promise. And just come here and see it for yourself and see that you can be who you want to be, and it will snatch you. I know a lot of people who come here for the first time and say, I'm never leaving, and they never do. Pride This Way, serving joy in every time zone.
Thank you, Pride This Way, for choosing the Provincetown Business Guild for the Pay It Forward program. We really appreciate it, and thank you for having us on this podcast.
During Pride and Women of Color Weekend in Provincetown, we found a little magic and met
a few Houstonians. The connection was instant. From H-Town to P-Town, these girls are showing up, showing out, and making Pride unforgettable.
My wife and I, we're in Provincetown because this is where we got married 15 years ago. And we wanted to come back and celebrate and remember all the greatness here.
We decided to get married when some of the states start building the momentum to acknowledge unities. So we heard about Provincetown and we came out here and were married in 2011. Been together a total of 20 years. Since I'm in mental health, it's always good to protect your mental health. So we go to places that support our identity. And this was one of those places.
Being a woman of color and being gay in this day and time, it's easier than it used to be way back. It was hard. It was a lot of violence as a result of it. I always refer to my wife as my wife. I don't hide anything about our unity. I brag about it. I really don't dumb down from it. If you're uncomfortable, then you're more than welcome to leave my presence. I've never gotten in trouble for it at work because, you know, at work you have to kind of limit what you talk about.
I can't tell all that I work with, who I am and what that is, because the focus is them and not about me. My immediate coworkers, I do share in social gatherings. I'm very out, but I'm limited in that regard. And I think being a woman has multiple identities when you add on minority statuses of any kind. And so we're always navigating all those layers.
Yes, the town crier has been calling communities together to share stories in Provincetown since the late 1800s. However, many believe it's the women who have helped shape the stories that really matter. Yes, P-Town is a mecca for men, but lesbians have claimed their vital place in its history, especially caring for gay men throughout the AIDS crisis of the 1980s. In Provincetown, lesbians were central, not incidental, to the community's response, and many provided hands-on care, organized volunteers, transported patients, and built one of the country's earliest local AIDS support networks. Today, we honor that enduring legacy by interviewing two entrepreneurs who bring heart shapes in every size to their community.
Hello, everybody. It's Jason. I'm here in Provincetown at the Somerset Inn, and today I'm interviewing the owner of Women Crafts, Michelle Axelson. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Jason.
How's it going?
Okay.
It says on the sign, like, since 1976.
Yes.
And I think with my powers of deduction, you may have not been born in 1976.
Well, the shop was established in 1976, and so was I. I was born in June of 77, so I was established along with the shop.
But do you feel like you grew up with the shop?
I think culturally, the powers that raised the shop also raised me, and the culture that impacted the shop impacted my whole life. And we've paralleled in the shop. As I was growing to be ready for the shop was growing to be ready for me and my generation of queer people. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely feel connected in that timeline. And the women who were doing the work they were doing in the 70s were life-changing. And I wouldn't, and we wouldn't as a queer community, have what we have without that group of people.
Yeah, I think that's important for us as a community to realize and understand about the past, the trials and tribulations of the past, of what everyone's been doing.
Yeah.
More so, I have to say and interject here, I do feel there's always been, since the 70s, a division of our world as well. There's always been they say lesbians and gays, gays referring to the homosexual men, but lesbian is also a gay as well too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I find that that is really divided, and I feel like it's kind of coming a little bit more together, which is why I was really excited to interview you as a gay man, talking to someone who's so pro-woman, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, I think it's good for gay men to educate themselves on how important it is for this type of story to be to women in particular.
Right.
So how important is it? How do you feel, like, how do you feel about yourself doing this type of stuff? And this, do you feel like you're being appreciated? Do you feel like this is all for the greater good? Like, Walk me through your emotional journey.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you historically the shop. So 1976 is a pivotal moment within feminism. Lesbians were being pushed out of the feminist movement because there was a fear that all feminists were being seen as men-hating lesbians. Mm-hmm. So Betty Friedan famously said, "Beware the lavender menace," which meant lesbians. And so lesbians were like, well, fuck off. We're going to create our own space. You don't want us. You're afraid to be associated with us. We have always been the hardest worker for everybody else's cause. We're going to go take care of ourselves now. So lesbian separatism was a real thing. And when the shop started, there was more of that feeling, mm-hmm. and good for them. But as is often the case with women-led organizations, you don't stay to yourself because you help other people. And part of the story of Provincetown, which I imagine maybe you've talked to other people around, it's the lesbians who sat next to and care took men dying of AIDS, because Provincetown is a safe harbor and a mecca for men who thought that they were going to die to cash in their life insurance policies, move to Provincetown. And their families who wouldn't talk to them, and their gay partners and friends who did not want to get what they had, mm-hmm. Weren't available. And lesbians had, there was a system of lesbian women innkeepers, which you'll meet Courtney from this inn, who is a woman's innkeeper. They had a secret system of going in and taking people's sheets and doing the laundry in the middle of the night because they weren't supposed to be seen going into certain places. So the history in Provincetown is really deep of how lesbians have always been there for gay men. I think it doesn't always feel reciprocal. So also hearing like, I'm pro-woman, absolutely I'm pro-woman. Everything we need to know right now is that women need to be listened to, heard, and believed, and trusted. And I'd never want to say that to the exclusion of non-binary and trans people. I include that in that sapphic umbrella. But I would say that it is, and this lesbian, before I came and bought the shop, I was a substance abuse counselor for gay men addicted to crystal meth. So absolutely, I'm for the boys too. And I can fall in love with any sick guy walking down the street. You know, so the awareness of what and how and who this community has been, I came to town in my 30s, so I obviously wasn't a crone, but I am a mommy figure to mm-hmm. gay men who need a woman to like them. And I think our community needs that from each other. I think all of the political causes, like if we don't have each other's back, we're really in trouble.
Jason here with Pride This Way, coming to you from Provincetown. If you've been to Provincetown before and you're walking towards the East End, you may have noticed where I'm being filmed from for this particular episode, from the beautiful building that's purple, this beautiful hue of purple called the Somerset House Inn. And today I'd like to welcome Courtney, who's the innkeeper, much more than an innkeeper. She makes a good breakfast as well from what I had. Courtney, welcome to Pride This Way.
Thank you, Jason.
She's the owner and she owns all this and she has it going on here in the purple building, which is so identifiable and I love that.
Thank you so much. And happy Pride to you.
Happy Pride.
Pride is one of my favorite events anywhere I go. And I know a lot of people may say that Provincetown is Pride every day. Yeah. But we definitely need to be celebrating Pride here to really get the focus and to be loud and, you know, on our LGBTQ community and just make sure we're celebrated and, you know, just talking about the challenges and you know, it's just really important. So yeah. It's going to be a fun weekend. And I love that it is kind of the beginning of our season. So it's kind of like that kickoff point to like our, you know, getting really busy and just summer here is such a joyful place. And so to start with Pride just feels really special.
Yes. And from talking to you and getting to know you for the past time mm-hmm. that we've spent together, you definitely are someone akin to me. So not only do I know that you're the innkeeper of this place, but you're also a member of the Provincetown Business Guild.
Correct. Yes.
So you're very busy and this yes. is the kickoff. So I see you look at your life in Provincetown built around all these events that go on and works with you being here as an innkeeper. Yes. So you really do have a pulse of what's going on.
Yeah, well, it also speaks to what I'm passionate about, which is, of course, running an inn, but it's all about making the best inclusive spaces mm-hmm. for people who may need a safe haven or just, you know, want to be somewhere comfortable where they can let their shoulders down and just be who they are. For the first time, or maybe they've been coming for 30 years. And so to run and own a guest house that I can build this really, you know, I get to cultivate this space where there's warmth and there's people meeting each other every day. I'm getting to hear people's stories every day, which is just very special. And then being on the board for the Business Guild, it's the same thing. We're working so hard to make these great events that showcase who we are as a community, really support our LGBTQ businesses, which is really important, and make sure that our town stays queer. We really, it's so important to us, and we're the only entity in town that really focuses on our LGBTQ community.
In our next episode, we travel to Madrid, Spain, and interview amazing artists, activists, and performers inside the famous Plaza Mayor. We take a closer look at Pride and hear the challenges from Spain's prominent gay politician, Santi Rivero. Join us for an intimate story of resilience and protest in the capital of Spain.
Join us bi-weekly for a new episode.
Pride This Way, serving joy in every convo.
Subscribe, download, pay it forward.